Hello and welcome to The Rest is History. This autumn sees the launch of the most eagerly anticipated sporting event of the season. We've had the World Cup of British Prime Ministers, we've had the World Cup of Ancient Gods, the winners in those two contests, Clement Attlee, of course, and Athena, who beat Odin, as I recall, in the final of the World Cup of Gods. But this is probably the most anticipated World Cup tournament of all. It is, of course, well, what is it, Tom Holland? Is it the World Cup of English Kings and Queens, or Kings and Queens of England, or what?
It's the Kings and Queens of England.
Now, this has been very controversial. Very controversial on Twitter.
It's been very controversial among us as well, as you know, we are the administrators of the sport.
You're Sepp Blatter. I'm Michel Platini.
Yes. Corruption is our middle name. but we should say before we get into the minutiae of it, to those listeners who may have no interest in World Cups or sport or anything, I mean, basically the premise for this is that we have 16 monarchs. And essentially it provides us with an excuse to talk about each one.
Yeah.
But
and to talk about the job and kingship absolutely. And all that
absolutely.
Sort of stuff.
And so the question of who qualifies for this has been actually very, very interesting, because we're doing this with Tracy Borman, who has a new book out on the monarchy. And we've had some quite serious discussions about who should be eligible, who shouldn't be eligible.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of the fascination of it. So the way the rubric works, for those who haven't heard the previous World Cups, is that on Saturday and Sunday, so if you're listening to this on Friday when it comes out, over this week when coming, we'll have the Super 16s. So we have eight seeds and we have eight other qualifiers, and they will play out. Then on the Monday, we will have the quarterfinals. On the Tuesday, we will have the semifinals. On the Wednesday, we will have the final to decide who is top king or queen of England.
Yeah.
And then the next week, we will go over it. We'll go over the matches and we'll talk about each of the individual monarchs in detail. So we should, I think, just say who the seeds are, shouldn't we?
Well, we'll talk about the seeds and the other qualifiers, and then we'll talk about who hasn't made it, because
yeah.
that will... So we can get into this question of what is a king or queen of England. So
absolutely.
The seeds,
yeah.
number one seed, Tracy Borman's favourite monarch, Elizabeth I, the Virgin Queen.
Number two, Henry VIII.
Everybody's favourite king, I think.
Number three, Henry V.
Agincourt.
Number four, William the Conqueror.
The Bastard, aptly named.
Number five, Victoria.
Yep, Empress of India.
Number six, Edward III.
Chivalry.
Number seven, I think a controversial one here. I certainly didn't nominate him, but I was outvoted. Charles II.
The Merry Monarch. Oh, but he's one of the most obviously recognisable monarchs
yeah,
in
I suppose,
English history.
And number eight, our current monarch, Elizabeth II.
See, I wouldn't have seeded the current queen, actually.
I think she's very good at being a queen, though.
Well, she's, yes, I suppose she's good at being a modern queen. Anyway,
yes.
we'll talk about
anyway,
this.
Anyway, all to be discussed. And then the other qualifiers, Edward I, Henry II, Richard I, George V, Henry VII, Knut, and then two controversial ones, Athelstan and Cromwell.
Yeah, Oliver,
now,
come on, not Richard.
I don't think that Athelstan in himself is a controversial entrant.
So who is Athelstan, Tom, for those who don't know?
Well, Athelstan is the subject of a Penguin Monarchs biography.
Yeah, very good book. Very good
by
book.
A top historian, namely me. So Penguin have done all the kings and queens of England, and I did the first one. And Athelstan is the first in the list, because Athelstan, conventionally understood, is the first king of England. So that's why the issue of whether this is English kings or queens, or whether it's kings of England, matter. Because if it's an English king, then, of course, Alfred the Great would qualify.
Yeah.
And Offa would qualify.
Yes. So Athelstan and Alfred, Tom. So why doesn't Alfred qualify? Because I thought he should be there. Michael Wood, the definitive kind of popular chronicler of the Anglo-Saxons, the man who brought the Anglo-Saxons to the masses in the 1980s and afterwards on TV, has written some wonderful books on Alfred and the Anglo-Saxons. He said, why isn't Alfred there? How do you plead?
Well, Alfred is obviously an English king. I'd say obviously it's not actually obvious, because nothing about this period is obvious. Because English identity is kind of being created from a multitude of different Anglo-Saxon kingdoms. And those kingdoms, as the name Anglo-Saxon implies, can either be Anglian, which is the basis for the future word English,
yeah.
or Saxon, as in Wessex, the kingdom of which Alfred is a king.
As in Sassanax.
Sassanax. So Alfred, on that basis, I guess you could say he's an English king, but he's not a king of England.
Doesn't he use the word England? Doesn't he use the word Englelond or something like that?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Does he not?
But what he does, he sponsors Bede's History of the English Church, which uses the word Anglia as a kind of synonym for what will become England. But the meaning of it's incredibly complicated because you obviously want to elide Anglia with England, but it's not quite the same thing. So you could say perfectly legitimately that Alfred is an English king. You could say that Offa, the great king of Mercia, is an English king. You could say that Radwald, perhaps the king who buried Sutton Hoo, perhaps he's an English king. So all of these could conceivably be ranked as English kings. But if you're going to say king of England, I think you've got to say that it's king of a realm that unites all the various Anglo-Saxon kingdoms, Wessex, Mercia, East Anglia, Kent, and Northumbria. And the first king who does that is Athelstan. So that's why I think Athelstan is eligible, but Alfred isn't.
Okay, and then let's fast forward a little bit. Charles II, who is the seventh seed on our list, is not just the king of England, he's also the king of Scotland. Then if you fast forward even further, so to, let's say, Victoria or or George V, who comes after her, they are not the kings of England. They are the monarchs of Great Britain or the United Kingdom. So how do you include them?
Well, this again is all part of the complexity of it. That obviously once James VI of Scotland becomes James I of England, he's very much a friend of the show. Sadly didn't make it. So people who have been accusing us of corruption, you'd have thought James would be first on the list.
It was the fat tongue. It was the big tongue too big for his mouth that let him down at the last moment.
And it's James has got a lot of supporters. So there's someone here, Neil Simpson, as he is a friend of the show, James VI first deserves a mention, massively expands his domain without a fight, intelligent, doesn't like witches, big tongue, doesn't overreact to terrorist threats. I mean, that's all right.
Neil has been listening to the Gunpowder Plot podcast, I suspect.
James VI of Scotland becomes James I of England. And so there, the crowns of England and Scotland are starting to be joined together. And then, beginning of the 18th century, you have the Acts of Union that join England and Scotland in a united kingdom of Great Britain. And then, at the beginning of the 18th century, you've got Ireland is also becomes part of that united kingdom. Beginning of the 20th century, Ireland, or at least most of it, leaves the united kingdom. So it's the kingdom of which these kings and queens are the monarch is constantly changing and evolving.
Yeah. Like the job itself, for the basis of this,
basically, if you have ruled England, whether on its own, whether as a part of the United Kingdom of Great Britain or the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland or United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, you are eligible.
So just before we come to the super controversial one, actually another one that raises an interesting question about is Canute, or Cnut as you call him. So Canute is not English. Here's the question. Does he rule England as England or does he rule it as part of a wider North Sea empire? That's sort of the question.
He's the king of England, but he's also the king of Denmark. And
Is he separately crowned in England, Canute?
Yes.
Because this issue of whether a king is crowned has raised a lot of, a lot of discontent among the fans. So I shall read. I've been receiving today an enormous number of tweets from a friend of the show, Capel Loft. I remember him getting very hot under the collar about Disraeli versus Gladstone in the very first tournament that we did. And he says, outrageous, outrageous decision. How can you exclude Alfred the Great on a technicality?
Well, we've explained that.
But not Cromwell on a rather more important technicality. He wasn't a king. Indeed, Cromwell specifically refused the crown and abolished monarchy, undermines the credibility of the whole competition. That then launched a whole series of tweets in which one of Capel Loft's followers, Madeline Grant of The Telegraph, said, would the rest is history allow the Ayatollah Khomeini to take part in a Miss World competition? They clearly would. So, Tom, Oliver Cromwell, the Ayatollah Khomeini of the Miss World that is the rest is history, the rest is history World Cup of English kings and queens, or kings and queens of England, rather. What's Cromwell doing there?
Cromwell is by far the most controversial entrant because, of course, famously, he chopped the head off a king.
Yeah.
He ruled as Lord Protector. But the reason that he's in is that he rules as Lord Protector because the English Constitution, even after the Civil War and the execution of Charles I,
needs
requires a monarchical figure.
Yeah.
And the issue for Cromwell is whether he will formally become a king, and he kind of hesitates over that, or whether he will take up some other title that enables him to rule as king.
Yes.
But the reason that he's in is that he is filling that king-shaped hole that exists in the English constitution if there is no king.
Well, there's also the iconography, isn't there? Cromwell uses the iconography of kingship. His coins have, you know, sometimes have a crown on them. They borrow the iconography that goes back to kind of the Roman emperors and so on. He has a sort of ceremony when he becomes Lord Protector that is clearly a more modest version of the coronation ceremony. Actually, the same is true of George Washington. And indeed, when Washington became president, there was all this conversation in America about what they would call him. Would they call him Your Highness or Your Majesty? And he ends up, and eventually the president is called Mr. President. But yes, also Cromwell just makes the competition more interesting.
More fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does make it more fun.
And it's great to see the fans, you know,
and Cromwell was
this.
Not a Republican, interestingly. I mean, Cromwell had always been a monarchist. He just believed
Charles I was
the man of blood. Right, exactly. Of course, Richard Cromwell could have been admitted. I mean, Richard Cromwell is a fascinating figure. But sadly, he didn't make it through the qualifiers.
I think, did he live even longer than the Queen?
Yeah, Richard Cromwell lived a ridiculous...
Has the Queen now overtaken him? I can't remember, yes. We'll
Richard Cromwell lived
out.
A ridiculously long life. There's all these stories about him being in...
popping up in 1972. he's still going strong.
No, there's the stories about Richard Cromwell and the courts of Europe when he's in exile, and people are always slagging off Richard, because he's under an assumed name, and people are always slacking off Richard Cromwell to him. and he always sort of says, I think you'll find he was very poorly served by the army.
Well, it's such, well, I mean, I think that we should, before we embark on all the excitement and thrills of the World Cup, we should just mention perhaps some of those who didn't make it. So we've mentioned James the First. We've mentioned Richard Cromwell. We have Frank Roberts. I'd go for the rank outsider George the Fourth, because he rebuilt more or less the whole of central London while the Philistines won.
George the Fourth would never have won a competition. He was, by common consent,
great breakfast.
An absolutely terrible king. I mean, hated by the public.
Terrible
to his wife.
Ate huge breakfasts.
Ridiculously fat and drunken.
Fantasized that he'd fought at the Battle of Waterloo.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to win. Who else? Simon Sharma. So we've had Michael Wood.
Simon Sharma was never King of England.
So Michael Wood has his contribution on Athelstan, who clearly he thinks should win, the great innovator of the English state. England's forgotten presiding genius, not by us.
Yeah.
But Simon Sharma, I'm rooting for George II.
George II?
But George II hasn't qualified.
But George II led the last, he was the last English king, wasn't he, or British king, to lead a cavalry charge.
And didn't he stand up to Handel?
Did he?
I mean, not stand up to Handel, stop him doing things, but stood up to show his respect.
I did not know.
Maybe I got that wrong.
George II, I'm not sure about George II. I suppose he was, I mean, you could argue George I was a, you know, crucially important king, you know, coming over from Hanover.
And then we've got Izzy Lawrence, presented with me on Radio 4 History series, and presenter of a very good podcast on dinosaurs, Terrible Lizards. And she says, King Edward VIII, because the evil arse nearly ended monarchy for good in this country. So Charles I for the same reason.
She's not a monarchist.
She's not Kapiloff wouldn't like that, would he?
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't. I think that's... King Edward VIII was a terrible man. Absolutely. If you ever read eyewitness sort of accounts of Edward VIII, you know, from the people who knew him, they say what a spoiled, utterly entitled, spoiled brat he was.
But that's why Izzy's rooting for him.
Well, okay. Well,
one other aspect of fan interaction,
yeah,
of course, is that... there are people beyond the borders of England who may well have slightly different perspectives on the English,
yes,
the monarchs of England. So Cromwell would be an obvious example. So there's been a bit of Irish blowback on his inclusion in the World Cup, unsurprisingly, and quite a lot of fan comments from Wales and Scotland on the presence of Edward I. So Edward I completed the English conquest of Wales obviously hammered the Scots. But this interesting comment from the great Coppite: as a Scot, I should be out for Edward's blood. But to be fair, a number of Scots nobles licked his boots, had lands in England and followed him. The place was in chaos. The line of kings dead. Brackets, don't ride a horse in the dark after a party. The house of Balliol ancient. Edward called him in. So There's a bit of unexpected Scottish support for Edward.
I had a tweet from a fellow called Martin Jones, who's a professor at, I think he's at Swansea or Cardiff, great historian of Wales, and he was very down on Edward I. So,
well, I think that's understandable.
Yes, I suppose it is. I mean, we shall see how Edward I gets on.
But I think also what is interesting is that we haven't exactly established the parameters of what it is that makes
a great king or queen.
Makes you likely to, yes. So are you voting for celebrity, for achievement, for charisma, for fame, for solidity, for length of reign, for dash? I mean, all up for grabs.
Well, here's a question, Tom. We'll obviously come to this when we do our big roundup of the tournament. But just off the top of your head, do you think the job has any continuity we go from Athelstan to Elizabeth II. Is there any continuity in the role that you can see from the days of Athelstan to 21st century?
Well, I'll tell you, I think an absolute point of continuity between Athelstan specifically and Elizabeth specifically, and it won't surprise you that what I'm going to pick on is that for both of them, the fact that the coronation is a sacral ritual. So Athelstan is crowned at Kingston upon Thames, and he's, I think, the first English king to be crowned in the sense of having a crown put on his head. And he's anointed. And this process of anointment, it's a Christian ritual that Athelstan takes incredibly, incredibly seriously. He's a very, very devout king, and he sees everything that he does through that prism. And I think that that Elizabeth II does as well. And I think that sense of the monarch as the kind of the key figure in a Christian realm is something that has run throughout the entire span of his existence. And obviously, as the hold of Christianity on Britain fades, and Britain is now a multicultural society, I think that has radically reconfigured the role of the monarchy. And it may well be that it will take, Charles III or William V before we properly understand perhaps just how much strain the institution is going to come under, because that traditional understanding of its role.
But do you think most ordinary people have, I don't think they have a sense of the Queen as chosen by God, do they?
No, I don't think they do anymore. I think she does.
But do you think they ever did? Do you think they
did? Yes, I do.
Not in our lifetime or the lifetime of our parents, surely, or our grandparents even.
No, it's the 50s, I think, was the last conceivable time where that kind of, because the coronation was famously shown on television, but the actual anointing was not, because that was felt to be too holy a ritual. I can't imagine that happening now. So I think that is something that has radically, radically changed over the course of this current Queen's life. And I think the fact that we haven't really kind of noticed that is one of the reasons why she deserves to be listed among the seeds.
See, I think what will be interesting, Tom, before we go, well, in the second half, we're going to go through the matches, aren't we? And just have a pick out some of the interesting ones. But I think what will be interesting to nod back to our epic Alexander the Great podcast is whether martial virtue is rewarded. Because to me, reading the Lady Bird Kings and Queens of England books as a child, which I absolutely adored, which gave me my basic kind of chronology of English and British history, what counted for a king was basically how many Frenchmen he had sent to the underworld.
Is number three.
Absolutely, because Henry V is the ultimate hero king, isn't he? Well, we'll come to this after the break, maybe. I think we should perhaps take a break, and we should come back and we should look at the group matches and try and tease out some pointers for anybody who wants to put a little wager on the outcome.
Not all the waters in the rough rude sea can wash the balm off an anointed king. Shakespeare's lines in Richard II. Richard II, of course, did not qualify because he was an absolute loser.
That's a bit harsh.
He was a terrible king.
Well, I suppose is he a terrible king just because of the way it ends, though? If it had ended differently, you wouldn't say he was a terrible king, would you? You'd say he was a great patron of the arts,
I think to get deposed, I mean, I think...
Really?
That's not good. That's pretty much, that's going to disqualify you right from the start.
Is he worse than Edward II, would you say?
Ooh, well, I mean, the worst kings, I think Edward II's up there.
Yeah.
Richard II's up there.
Henry VI
is up there. I mean, they're all very bad.
The truth of the matter is, though, if you met some of these people, particularly, let's say, Henry VI, I mean, his problem is that he's just quite a nice guy.
Yeah.
Isn't he? He's weak and he thinks about God and he likes stained glass.
Yes.
But
cathedrals and things.
Yeah. I mean, he's a Guardian reader. He's a Guardian reader of kings. What you need, I mean, it's the Daily Express readers who tend to flourish
Henry
as kings,
V.
isn't it? Henry V, yeah.
Right. Well, okay. So on that topic, should we look at the draw has just been announced today by Jonathan Wilson.
Oh, very good. Very exciting.
And so the first match that we've got, so we've got four matches that will be going out on Saturday and four that will be going out on Sunday. So the four matches that will be going out on Saturday, if you want to follow that, perhaps to vote in it, it'll all be on Twitter, perhaps to have a flutter with the bookies, with Paddy Power or whatever. The first one, Elizabeth I, the top seed against Edward I.
See, I don't want to prejudge the outcome, but I can only see one winner there.
So you haven't prejudged it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you said beforehand that Edward I has this handicap of Scots and Welsh are never going to vote for him. And Elizabeth I is absolutely sort of enshrined, isn't she,
in
identity.
Catholics might not vote for her. Spanish won't.
No. Spanish, do we have a big Spanish following?
Don't know, maybe.
Maybe Diogo Morgado, or is he Portuguese? I'm not sure.
He'll be boycotting it, won't he? As a Marxist. I think you've got back Elizabeth there.
Yeah, and the Edwards, I mean, I don't want to be mean to the Edwards because we've got another one coming up, but to my mind, Edward I and Edward III are basically the same person. I mean, I'm not a medievalist, obviously, but are they that different? Are they that different, Tom?
Well, Edward I, of course, also Edward I also is the king who expelled the Jews.
Yeah, well, that will count against him.
So that may well count against him.
I mean, she's only got the Catholics to worry about, hasn't she, really? So I think she'll be all right.
And as I say, the Spanish. Then the second one is, all the twos.
Yeah.
Elizabeth II against Henry II.
I don't want to bet against the Queen, but I think Henry II is just so much more interesting. So what Elizabeth has never had to face, but which he did, was all her children turning against her and rising up in rebellion.
Prince Harry?
Yeah, but his grandchild, and also it's not. I mean, they didn't. I mean, it's not like Richard the Lionheart gave an interview to Oprah Winfrey. Isn't it Henry II that his wife says to him in The Lion in Winter, "War, war, war. That's all you care about, Henry Plantagenet."
It is, and if you want to hear more on that theme, of course, don't forget that on Sunday we're doing cinema in history. Very few tickets left, but you might be able to snaffle one if you're quick. So Elizabeth II against Henry II. I mean, who knows? And then all the Henrys, Henry V against Henry VII.
Well, this is a big one, isn't it? Because this is a clash between glamour and the antithesis of glamour. So Henry V is Agincourt. He is receiving a gift of tennis balls from the French.
Well, he's blowing money on invading France and winning glory.
Yeah.
Whereas Henry VII is very much the opposite. He's not about glory. He's about saving money.
But he did win his crown on the battlefield. I mean, to be fair to Henry VII,
yeah, he did.
People view him as the sort of patron saint of accountants. But I mean, he won his crown in a very adventurous manner.
It's kind of Boris against Rishi, isn't it? Are you in favour of insane lunatic projects that will kind of look good and flashy but will go wrong?
Yeah.
Or are you in favour of harvesting the pennies?
I mean, Rishi Sunak isn't harvesting the
pennies. I know he isn't.
Spending,
he's been
like,
bullied into
of pounds.
By Boris. But I mean, obviously, clearly, he just wants to cut everything.
I mean, I think you have a long-standing animus against Henry V, don't you? I know this. I've known this for some time. What is it based on?
I just think he's a show pony.
Just because he died. If he hadn't died, you wouldn't think that. He'd been king of France and England.
No, the French would never have accepted him. It was never going to work. Anyway, listen, we mustn't talk about this. We've got to save it for the final. But yeah, I'm backing Henry VII on that one. And then the last one, this is the last match that we played on Saturday, is William I against Knut. So
now that's a great
pairing, because of course both.
It's like
of
when
them,
the World Cup is happening and it's kind of Belgium against Argentina or something. You think, that could be quite a good match.
They're both conquerors of England. Knut conquers England.
They're both conquerors.
William conquers England. They're both 11th century.
They've both got Viking heritage. Obviously, yeah. Knut very obviously, William more indirectly. They're both kind of quite... I mean, is Knut cruel? Is he a cruel man?
No.
Is he a hard man? I mean, William is very cruel and hard, isn't he?
Well, Knut imposed a 100% tax rate 1 year running.
That's
so...
That's harsh. Kind of
Dennis Healy-esque.
Dennis Healy, yeah.
So I reckon that's an interesting match. I reckon William is, I mean, he's seeded. I think he'll probably win that.
But William will surely suffer from people who will not his funeral count against him?
What,
didn't his body burst and all his entrails fell out and the stench made people run away?
Well, also, I mean, also, he did conquer England and I mean, Northerners will
He behaved be disgracefully.
Him.
He behaved disgracefully. I think I will be absolutely upfront about it. I really want Canute to knock him out. I'd rather be part of a sort of North Sea empire than a union with the French, personally.
Okay.
Yep. I'm all about Scandinavia. I really want Canute to win that.
That may be a point on which Capel Loft and you agree.
Yeah, good.
So we'll see. Right. So that's the first group. Then the next set of Super 16 matches will be played on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And the first match is two great, charismatic, military, medieval kings, Edward III against Richard I, the Lionheart.
Now, Edward III obviously starts the Hundred Years' War, doesn't he? Is there anything else you can tell me to distinguish him from Edward I?
Yes, he didn't expel the Jews, and he was king during the Black Death.
Okay, did he not? Is he a chivalry man? Big round table?
Yes.
Is that him?
Order of the Garter.
Yeah.
Honey, your garter's fallen off.
So he's he's for Mr. Chivalry. And Richard I, now to me, I would say Richard I faces a slightly uphill battle because one thing that everybody knows about him is he barely ever set foot in England and just wanted money to go on the Crusades.
No, but what people also know about him is that he was a huge lion who turned up and sorted out Sir Hiss.
Yes. He always pitches up at the end of... Is he Robin Sean Hood Connery films. In Robin Hood, Prince
he's,
of Thieves?
He's Sean Connery, yes, exactly. So I reckon that may go
But also, of course, what would also go in his favour is minstrels. Because isn't it Blondel who troubadours and turns up playing music outside the castle to rescue
Crusades,
him?
Minstrels, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I think if you're into that kind of thing, you'd probably go for Richard. But if you know anything about medieval history, you'd say he was a calamitous king of England.
Am I also right? There was a comment on Twitter after Alexander the Great podcast that we hadn't talked about Alexander's sexuality. Am I right in thinking that the LGBT vote might go for Richard I?
They might do. There's some that yes, you could spin it that way. I think.
Right.
I think not.
So part of the listeners may want to vote for him on inclusivity and diversity grounds.
He attacked lots of Muslims.
Okay. Well. Oh, it's swings and roundabouts with Richard, isn't it?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. So interesting. That's what sports
so
all about, isn't it?
I see that one going to penalties. Sports,
yeah. And then, of course, this is the classic. The classic. Charles II against Oliver Cromwell.
I'll be frank, I can only see one winner, but it's not the right person.
I think that's a classic.
So if you like dogs... Very long curled hair.
Orange cellars.
Secret deals with the French. Closet Catholicism.
Oak trees.
Exclusion crises.
Yeah, it's got to be Charles.
Fires. It's Charles II. If you like stern, rigorous law and order leadership, as I do, if you have read the excellent article in the Daily Mail 10 years ago that proclaimed Oliver Cromwell the greatest man that ever lived. It was. They illustrated it with a picture of Richard Harris waving a sword against a backdrop of kind of burning Irish huts or something, which I heartily approved of, went down very well with my wife. I mean, I'd love to see Oliver get through that round, but I think it's all the odds are against him, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but that's the fascination. That's the fascination. Then the penultimate one.
And actually, the funny thing about that, Tom, funny thing about that is a lot of people said during Charles II's reign, he's not as good as Oliver.
Yeah, the Dutch
people
ambassador.
Actually would say this.
The Dutch ambassador
they
said
would
it
say
to his face.
Oliver was much, yes. And actually, secretly, he ended up pursuing a lot of the same policies that Oliver Cromwell.
So maybe the Dutch will swing in behind Charles II. I mean, they haven't got William III.
No.
The Dutch,
no, why
the,
didn't William the, why didn't William make it?
We didn't nominate him. None of us nominated him.
No, strange. Well, anyway, I'd have thought as a Dutchman yourself, at least nominally, you might have gone for him, but evidently not.
No, but I'm going for Cromwell. And then Victoria against Athelstan.
Well, that's a clash of styles.
isn't it? I mean, obviously, I want Athelstan to win.
I think he probably will win.
I don't know. I mean, Victoria's got a lot of brand recognition.
She has, but as what, though? As a sort of widow, as a grumpy...
Well, no, because she's been reinvented, hasn't she? As a kind of sassy, sexy...
Has she?
Kind of babe.
Oh, by Jenna Coleman. Yes, you're right.
She's Jenna Coleman.
I see. I think the one thing that she's got that nobody else in this competition so far has got is that she was also Empress of India.
Yeah.
And 20 years ago, that might have been enough to see her through, but now people might hold that against her.
They might do. So, I mean, I'm guessing that Satnam Sangera will be rooting for Athelstan in this one. Perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the woke elements of Twitter, again, will be very much Team Athelstan on this.
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think so. I'm certainly rooting for Athelstan. And then the last one is Henry VIII against George V. Probably our most interesting king against, by far, our most boring. Why? I mean,
no,
why?
No, George V.
George V. I mean, honestly, you and Tracy both very keen on George V.
George V is a tremendous fellow. I like George V a lot.
He'd be a tremendous fellow, but he's incredibly
I think
dull.
He had a tattoo. There's that famous footnote. H.A.P. Taylor's History of England Between the Wars, where he has just a little footnote where he, with each character, and he gives their dates and stuff. And it says George V, born this, died this, creased his trousers at the sides rather than front and back.
He's a stamp collector, wasn't he? Is the other thing.
He was a great stamp collector. I mean, one of the world's all-time great stamp collectors, something he had in common with Franklin Roosevelt.
But also he didn't chop off the heads of his wives.
No, he didn't. So Henry VIII is an interesting one because he's the second seed. And that really is brand recognition. And he's also probably, would you say, the most consequential monarch?
Yeah.
He's got to be up there, hasn't he? I mean, he's...
I'd say he's the most famous as well.
The most famous, the most consequential.
And the most famous.
So the first British film ever to win the Best Picture Oscar was The Private Life of Henry VIII with Charles Laughton, I think. Or Laughton himself won the Oscar.
This is the kind of quality that you'll be getting at the Odeon Leicester Square.
Yeah. On Sunday. And I think Henry VIII in America and around the world, I mean, people who don't know the other Henrys have this image of this enormous man eating chicken legs and marrying and beheading wives and breaking with Rome for purely self-interested reasons.
So maybe the Americans will get behind him.
Well, I like George V, but there's part of me that quite likes
But the Americans are never going to get behind George V.
No. I think you're probably right. Certainly
unless they muddle him with George VI, as in the King's Speech.
Yes, those aren't really grounds for.
So if I was George V's coach, that's a strategy that I would recommend.
So if you're the Sam Musabini of the Chariots of Fire, a professional coach, people would sneer at you. So Tom, if you were to just looking at this now, who do you think the final four will be?
I think Elizabeth I, Henry V. Henry VIII, and I'm hoping Athelstan.
I think Charles II will go far. I think
he'll be knocked out by Cromwell.
Do you? I don't. I think he'll win. I don't think he'll win the competition, but I think he'll beat Cromwell. I think the Merry Monarch thing, people like a kind of dissipated.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's interesting, isn't it, how certain monarchs just become absolutely enshrined in the national imagination. And the ones you've named, Elizabeth I, Henry VIII, Henry V, I don't think Athelstan, frankly.
Well,
Richard I. I mean, Richard I is only famous because of the Crusades. And being
Robin
captured.
Hood.
And Robin Hood, yeah.
I'd say he's most famous for Robin Hood.
We haven't mentioned Canute and the Waves, whether the nautical community
yes.
will get behind him.
Yeah, yachtsmen. Like, yeah. The yachting community.
Yachtsmen and Danes.
Rally. Yeah.
So, yeah. And you'll find the winner? What's your prediction for the winner?
I think Elizabeth I.
Do you?
She's
the top
seed, I think, for a
reason. Boring, though, wouldn't it? It'd be boring if she won. Well, Tracy Borman wants her to win, I know. I'd like to see, I mean, deep down, I'd like to see Oliver Cromwell win, just to annoy Capel Loft.
So, you'd agree with me that Elizabeth I, Henry VIII, and Henry V.
Henry V will be
in the quarterfinal, be in the semifinals. Who you don't think Athelstan will? Who do you think will be?
Charles II.
Charles II, okay.
Yeah. But I agree with you. One thing I do agree with you about is I don't think Henry V will deserve a semifinal place if he gets it. I mean, I'll always back him a little bit because of the anti-French thing. Mm-hmm. But but he didn't rule very long and he left the country in a mess. He died too young. There's got to be a penalty for dying
too
early.
So. Yes,
leaving.
I think so.
I mean, even Henry VIII managed to provide three heirs. Yeah. I mean, despite all the hullabaloo about the son, he at least managed to provide three heirs, whereas Henry V left only a baby, and the result was the Wars of the Roses.
It was a useless baby, wasn't it?
Yeah, useless.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You can leave a baby, leave a good one.
Right, well, I hope that that's whetted your appetites for this. I mean, it's going to be an absolute festival of sport, isn't it?
It is.
Monarchical sport at its best.
Well, we've had some great clashes. I mean, the two that stick in my mind, the two ties that I'd like to see, the classics, I think, in most fans' eyes, but Disraeli versus Gladstone.
That was brilliant, wasn't it? I remember sitting as midnight approached, kind of refreshing the phone.
Yeah, that one. And then something that still, I'll be honest, I'm still a little bit cross about, which was Isis against Anubis. And I think we can all agree that you went against the spirit of the competition, whipping up support for Isis against Anubis, who you mocked unfairly as a dog.
He was a dog.
Well, I mean, he's dog-headed. He's a jackal-headed god, isn't he? I mean, that's not a dog. Anyway. Well,
that's his whole thing, isn't it? I mean, that was the whole point.
So who knows what will happen this time? I mean, if it's Athelstan versus Cromwell, that could get a bit kind of Lennon-McCartney circa 1969.
Oh, I'm so nervous for Athelstan. I'm so nervous for him that I almost didn't want him to be in, so I wouldn't.
Well, that's why you didn't want Henry. I hope I'm not giving too much away when I tell the listeners that one reason you disbarred Alfred the Great was because you didn't want to see him lose. That's the truth, isn't it?
Yes, that is true. I would cry.
A terrible reason.
If Alfred entered this and he didn't win, I would cry.
All these endless texts you were sending me. Oh, no, the rubric, the penguin monarchs, all this sort of stuff.
But that's true. That's true. But there is also the emotional. I would probably give up the podcast in despair of Britain.
Wow. Would you?
Yes, I would.
That's very strong. Well, as you know, I just wouldn't.
What about Anubis?
No, I felt like that about whether Alexander the Great would rise to the top of the iTunes history episodes chart.
And it did.
I just felt if he didn't make number one, it would be an insult to Alexander, to the podcast. Yes. And he did eventually, so I was delighted.
Yes. Right, well, so I'm going to be very, very nervous on Athelstan's behalf, but at least I don't have to face the prospect of Alfred being knocked out in the Super 16s round. So massive excitement. I'm sure you will all have your favourites. Make sure that you vote. There'll be regular updates over the course of the tournament. We've got Tracy Borman, as we said, providing her brilliant analysis. If you want to go through and see what she has to say about each of the contenders, there's a thread that I've posted on it in Twitter. I think the hashtag is Kings and Queens World Cup. Kings and Queens World Cup. And her book, Crown and Scepter, A New History of the British Monarchy from William the Conqueror to Elizabeth II. We will also have in-depth analysis from top sports journalist Jonathan Wilson, who will be doing who's done the draw for us and all kinds of things like that. So enjoy the World Cup of Kings and Queens. And we will rejoin Dominic when we know the results and go over the matches and go into more detail about each of these 16 contenders.
May the best king or queen win.
Or Lord Protector. Bye-bye.